Ever wonder what separates a shoplifter from a robber? Or like, where's that line?
Yeah.
Today we're going to deep dive into People v. Estes, California case that really gets into that question.
Okay.
So think about this. Curtis Estes walks out of Sears wearing a stolen coat and vest.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty straightforward shoplifting, right?
Sounds like it.
But here's where it gets interesting. A security guard confronts him, but out in the parking lot.
Oh, okay.
So that's when things escalate. Estes pulls out a knife, threatens the guard, makes a run for it.
Wow.
He later admits to the theft, though, but he claims he never actually used force. But the jury convicted him of robbery.
Interesting.
Now, wait, hold on. Yeah. I'm a little confused here.
Okay.
If he's already in the parking lot,
right,
isn't he in the clear? Like, how can they say the robbery's still in progress?
That's where the appeals court had to figure some things out.
Right.
First, they had to figure out if the security guard could even be considered a victim of robbery.
Okay.
The robbery requires taking property from somebody, but the guard didn't own the clothes, right?
So how did the court justify that?
They used something called constructive possession.
That...
The guard, basically as an employee who's supposed to prevent theft, he had this kind of legal interest in the merchandise,
mm-hmm.
much like, you know, you think about a librarian protecting books.
Uh-huh.
They don't own the books, right, but they're responsible for them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the law recognizes that someone doesn't have to own the property to be a victim of robbery if they have a duty to protect it.
That makes sense. Okay, so Estes was already outside.
Yeah.
How does that fit the idea of taking something from someone's, like, immediate presence?
So the court got kind of creative here.
Okay.
They said that because he was resisting the guard's attempts to get the clothes back, he essentially took the property from his immediate presence, even though they were outside.
Interesting.
It's about control, not just like you're standing right next to them.
Gotcha.
They even said preventing recovery is treated like taking directly from the victim.
That's pretty broad.
It is.
So even if a confrontation's outside,
yeah,
using force to stop him from getting the stuff back,
right,
could still be considered robbery.
Exactly.
Okay.
But there's another piece of this.
Oh, okay.
Estes argued that once he was out of the store, the theft was over.
Right.
So the knife was just a separate assault.
Mm-hmm.
But the court said, hold on, we have this continuing offenses doctrine.
Okay, now I'm really interested. What's a continuing offense and how does that apply here?
Well, it basically says that robbery isn't just about the initial taking.
Uh-huh.
It keeps going until the person gets to a place that's relatively safe.
Okay.
So in this case, he hadn't really gotten away yet.
Right.
Still in the parking lot,
yeah,
still trying to keep the stuff, still
yeah,
trying to flee. They saw this as a continuation of the robbery, not a separate thing.
So even running away could be part of the robbery.
Exactly.
Wow.
The court said the escape is as critical as the initial taking.
Wow.
Any force you use to keep the stolen goods or even to get away that can make it robbery even after you initially took the stuff.
This continuing offense idea.
Yeah.
Like, I'm having to rethink how I think about robbery now.
Right.
It feels like there's a line, but it's really hard to see.
It is.
Do you have an example? Like, where would that line be?
Well, think about it this way.
Okay.
If he'd made it to his car, taken off, gotten to someplace safe, even temporarily,
okay,
and then later used force to fight someone off trying to get the clothes back,
right,
that might be totally different.
Okay.
The court in Estes didn't actually say, like, how far this goes or for how long.
So there's still some gray area there.
Yeah, there is.
Okay. So just so I'm clear.
Yeah.
Using force any time before you're safe can mean a robbery charge.
Mm-hmm.
That really makes the time frame a lot longer than I thought it was.
For sure.
Okay.
And that's a big deal for lawyers and law students, right?
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it really changes how we think about robbery.
Yeah.
It's not just about what happens in the store anymore.
It's a whole process.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, before this deep dive, I kind of thought shoplifting and robbery were, you know, pretty straightforward.
Right.
But now I'm seeing there's actually a lot more gray area than I thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Makes you think about, like, how many everyday situations might fall under this, this continuing offense.
Totally. And for those of us who aren't, you know, lawyers, it's kind of mind-boggling.
Late.
But okay, so you mentioned that this case has implications for lawyers and law students.
Yeah.
Could you kind of break that down a little more for us?
Definitely. Understanding this case, especially that continuing offense thing, it's like having another tool in your legal toolbox.
Okay.
So for lawyers, you know, especially if they're defending someone accused of robbery,
mm-hmm,
this doctrine's like essential.
Can you give us a real world example? Like, how would this work?
Imagine someone shoplifts, right?
Okay.
A couple things from the store. and then like shoves a security guard to get away.
Seems like robbery to me.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you don't get this continuing offense thing,
right,
a defense attorney might miss the chance to say, hold on, this isn't robbery.
Okay.
They could argue that the theft was done once they left the store.
Right.
And that the shove was just assault, totally separate.
Oh, interesting.
So using estes, they could say the whole thing was one robbery from the shoplifting to the shoving.
Gotcha.
Estes sets this precedent, which helps the prosecution a lot.
Right.
It shows that using force, even after you take something, can be robbery if it's part of escaping or holding onto the stolen goods.
So it's the whole escape, not just the store.
Exactly.
Wow. This case really shows how important strategy and how you interpret things is in law.
For sure. It's not just the facts. It's about how you present them, how you argue them within the law.
Right.
A good lawyer can use something like estes to make a case for either side.
Okay, but doesn't this help the prosecution more? How does the defense use this?
It's tricky, right? It cuts both ways.
Yeah.
The defense could use estes to get a lesser charge.
Okay.
Or maybe challenge the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
They might try to prove their client was already safe before using force, meaning the robbery was over.
Oh, so both sides can use it.
Exactly.
It really shows that law isn't always black and white, huh?
Exactly. And that's what makes estes so interesting and important for us legal folks.
Yeah.
It shows that there's a lot of gray areas. And how a lawyer understands and uses precedents like this one, that's what makes the difference.
It really gives you a new perspective on how complex law is.
Definitely.
And for law students, estes is like a gold mine, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Perfect case study.
Yeah, it gets them into the nitty-gritty of criminal law, especially with property.
Right.
Makes them think critically about possession, immediate presence, and of course, continuing offense.
Sounds like required reading to me.
It pretty much is.
Okay.
And it's not just about remembering the facts.
Right.
They can use estes to look at other robbery cases, see how different places handle it, even think about like what it means for policies and stuff.
So one case can spark all sorts of legal explorations.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It really is.
Yeah.
But before we move on,
yeah,
estes focuses on the security guard.
Right.
What about regular people?
Mm-hmm.
Customers, bystanders.
Yeah.
Could they be victims of robbery under this constructive possession idea?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
It gets to the heart of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Estes was about the guard, but those same principles could apply to anyone who has a duty to protect property, legally speaking.
So like a store employee.
Yeah.
Or even another shopper who jumps in to stop a theft,
mm-hmm.
they could be considered a robbery victim.
It's possible, yeah.
Okay.
It all depends on what happened.
Right.
And how the court looks at constructive possession in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Estes was about the guard. Yeah. But it could change how we think about robbery in general.
This case is more than just legal stuff, right?
Yeah, great.
It makes you think about property, ownership, using force, like all that in society.
Exactly. People v. Estes isn't just about shoplifting and robbery.
Right.
It shows us what we value as a society and how we protect both individual rights and property.
Wow, I hadn't thought about it that way.
That's what's so cool about a deep dive like this.
Yeah.
We can go deeper into a case, yeah. See the hidden meanings and stuff.
Right.
And sometimes those go way beyond the courtroom.
Okay, so we've talked about what this means for lawyers and law students.
Yeah.
But what about, like, the bigger questions?
Mm-hmm.
What does estes tell us about how we feel about property and force?
That's a really important question.
Yeah.
People have been debating that for a long time.
Okay.
In a way, the estes decision really focuses on property rights.
Uh-huh.
It makes it easier to go after people who use force, even if they're just trying to get away with stolen stuff.
So it's like saying, we're serious about property crime. No violence, even if the theft wasn't that big.
Exactly. But some folks say that focus on property might hurt other things we care about.
Okay.
Like individual freedom and fairness in the legal process.
Right. I see what you mean. So making robbery a bigger deal could mean harsher punishments.
Yeah.
Even for stuff that wasn't considered that bad before.
Uh-huh. And it might even stop people from trying to stop thefts.
Yeah.
Because they're scared of getting hurt.
That's a good point. You're bringing up some tough questions here.
It is tough. We got to ask ourselves, how far should we go to protect things?
Right.
When does using force become too much? And how do we balance all of this with keeping people safe and holding people accountable?
Whoa, those are some heavy questions.
They are.
I didn't think a shoplifting case could get so deep.
That's the thing about people v. Estes.
Yeah.
It's not just about the law.
Right.
It makes us think about our values as a society.
It's been amazing exploring all this with you.
Thanks.
We went from shoplifting to robbery to legal ideas to ethics.
It's a lot, right?
I feel like I get it all so much better now.
That's what we want with the deep dive.
Yeah.
To get people curious, to make them think, and to leave them with more questions than answers.
Oh, speaking of questions.
Yeah.
Anything else about people v. Estes that you think our listeners should think about? Like a final takeaway?
Well, we talked about how robbery is defined more broadly now.
Right.
But what about the other side?
Okay.
What if Estes had gotten away without using the knife? Would the court have seen it differently?
Right.
Would we see him differently?
That's interesting. Makes you think about how luck plays into things.
It does, right?
Like one little change could change everything.
Exactly. That's why we have to look at legal cases carefully, see things from different sides, and remember that the law isn't always perfect.
That's a great point. Well, this deep dive into People v. Estes has been incredible.
I agree.
Thanks for taking us through it.
You're welcome. I always enjoy a good deep dive.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this legal adventure.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
We hope you enjoyed exploring the twists and turns of People v. Estes.
It's a fascinating case.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp. 2070 Sun.